KRHS Radio, Rosemount High School, Rosemount, Minnesota.
And now, coming to you from the stage of the Performing Arts Center at Rosemount High School, Rosemount, Minnesota, America. You are on the air with KRHS Radio Theater, streaming live on the internet in the style of old-time radio. Sponsored by District 196 and produced by the RHS Theater Arts Program, tonight's show features Alex Thibodeau and Christy Emanuelson back here on keyboards, Josh Hugo and Connor Cruitt on guitars, with George Tangen on percussion. Our radio performing company, Ryan Paler, Alexa Mon, Peter Wallen, Megan Olson, Dylan Giles, Maddie Holtz, Justin Blackman, Hannah Nelson, and I'm Johnny Garrido, your host for tonight's show. Greetings, and welcome to the RHSPAC and our radio theater show for 2013. Sit back and enjoy the next hour filled with an eclectic mix of funny scripts and cool songs. In fact, we're going to kick things off with a song that is sure to get you snapping those fingers and tapping those toes. Here's Alexa, Megan, Hannah, and Maddie with their rendition of Hallelujah, I Love 'Em So. Take it away, ladies.
Me coffee in my favorite cup. That's how I know. Yes, I know. Oh, oh, hallelujah. I just love him so. When I'm in trouble and I have no friend, I know he'll be with me till the end. Now everybody asks me how I know. I smile at them and say, hey, tell me so. That's how I know.
Tonight in our tribute to old-time radio, we're going to bring you some suspense. Another 5-minute mystery. See if you can solve the case before the end of the program.
Alice. One more block, and you'll behold the Brooks household.
2 whole years, Jim. It just doesn't seem possible it's been so long. You and Dorothy married and with a place of your own.
It's true, all right. Only too bad you haven't taken advantage of the old Brooks hospitality sooner.
Well, I'm here now and I intend on having a perfectly wonderful time.
Now here we are.
Oh, what a charming place this is.
Dorothy's probably on needles and pins waiting for me to get you here. Darling, it's Jim. Here's Alice.
Jim, look!
What? Where?
There, on the living room floor. It's Dorothy. Dead.
Mr. Brooks, I'm afraid you and Miss Manning will have to submit to some routine questions.
I'll be happy to help in any way I can, Inspector.
Thank you, Miss Manning. Now, Mr. Brooks, while we're waiting for some information I phoned for, I want you to tell me exactly what happened this morning.
Well, there's nothing much to tell. Both my wife and I were quite excited, expecting Alice. That is Miss Manning here, to visit us from Chicago. I was to wait until she called me at the office.
And you were there all morning?
Yes, until Miss Manning's train arrived, and we came out here.
I had written Miss Brooks to tell her that I would call Jim at the office as soon as I had arrived. The train was an hour late. Maybe if I had been here earlier, it might have prevented this.
Well, that remains to be seen. Apparently, Mrs. Brooks was sitting here in this chair, putting red polish on her fingernails, when she was shot from behind. The polish had spilled all over the carpet, and she was still holding the tiny brush in her hand. She must have recognized her attacker, and since she did not die instantly, she printed these 3 initials here on the floor with the polish. D.O.C.
D.O.C. I wish we could tell you whose initials she was trying to reveal.
You're sure you don't know anyone whose name would fit that?
Positive. I can't.
Oh.
Yes, Miss Manning? Can you think of somebody with those initials?
Well, D.O.C. spells Doc. And that's Mr. Brooks's nickname.
Why, it can't be.
Yes, Mr. Brooks?
I haven't been called Doc for over 2 years now. It was a nickname I picked up in school. My wife didn't like the name and never used it. No one in New York even knows me by Doc. You've got to believe me, Inspector. It's the truth.
Oh, we'll see. Just a minute. Hello? Yes, Grady. Yes, I see. Well, it's sewed up anyway, thank you. Well, you both will be happy to know our little murder is solved.
Oh, then it wasn't Doc after all?
No, Miss Manning, it wasn't, Doc. I'm arresting you, Miss Manning, for the murder of Dorothy Brooks.
Why did the inspector arrest Miss Manning for the murder of Mrs. Brooks? In a moment, we'll hear. But first, this. This episode of 5-Minute Mystery is being brought to you by the First State Bank of Rosemount, providing quality banking services to the Rosemount community since 1909, member FDIC.
Over 100 years of your trust, quality service begins with us at the First State Bank of Rosemount.
Member FDIC.
And now, back to our story.
How dare you arrest me? I was still on the train.
Your train wasn't late, Miss Manning. That phone call just verified the fact. You came out here, murdered Mrs. Brooks, and returned to the station to call Mr. Brooks to pick you up. That wasn't what really gave you away, though, Miss Manning. It's just too bad you didn't know Mr. Brooks was no longer called Doc when you printed those letters on the carpet. The next time you leave a name as a clue to throw suspicion, you'd better get that name right. But of course, there won't be a next time, will there, Miss Manning?
Join us again next time for another chance to solve a 5-minute mystery. This next song is sung by a young man to his lover about his plans of growing old together with her. It was written by Paul McCartney when he was 16 and recorded by the Beatles in 1966 for their album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Here's Justin, Megan, and the gang with When I'm 64.
When I get older, losing my hair, many years from now? Will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till Carter till three, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Now we bring you the Chronicles of Hexapus. This is a brand spanking new piece written by our own Alex Thibodeau. That's Tibby over there on the keyboard. Give a wave, Tibby. The Chronicles of Hexapus is the heartwarming tale of how a six-tentacled octopus overcomes the torment of his peers with the help of friendship and some sassy one-liners. A long, long time ago, under the deep blue sea, a great legacy was born of an octopus named Jeffrey. He grew up the local laughingstock. Oh, how he was a spectacle. These are the Chronicles of Hexapus, the octopus with six tentacles.
Thanks for helping me swim home, Jerry Jellyfish and Starfish Sammy.
Hey, that's what friends are for, Jeffrey.
And y'all better believe your mom's kelp cookies will be keeping a starfish up in the club.
Yeah. I suspected there was an underlying incentive here.
Wait, who is that coming out of the murky area over there?
Oh, man. Here comes Hammerhead and his crew.
Oh, boy. Oof.
Well, I thought they'd still be in detention for sure. Eh, just ignore them, Jeffrey.
Ha! Looky what we got here, boys.
I don't know, Hammer. Just looks to me like the leftover scraps from the seafood buffet.
Probably wasn't much of a seafood buffet if there wasn't much to see.
Come on, guys. Cool off, would ya?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you bothered? Well, allow me to lighten up the mood for you. I've got just the thing. You know why six was afraid of seven?
Tell us.
Because his name was Hexapus and he didn't have enough tentacles to count that high.
Come on, let's just go home.
Hey, guys. You know why Hexapus is so hungry?
Why?
Well, we all know Hexapus has never ate anything.
Don't you have anything better to do than torment the entire ocean?
Well, I could be practicing for the Marina High School swim meet next week.
But...
let's just say my biggest threat will always be two lengths behind.
Yo, you can take the rest of Jeffrey's tentacles and attach rocket boosters to your fins, and he'd still school you so hard you'd be choking on his bubbles for weeks.
You better hope his mother doesn't beat him to it. Because those cookies she brought to my mom's book club last night were enough to gag the lowest fish of the trenches.
Oh, are you sure you're not mistaking them for your face? Because at least the lowest fish of the trenches are able to shield themselves from the daily nausea you bless us with.
You listen here, you son of an eel. I'd say I could get 10 times the angelfish you even had a chance with. But multiplying by zero is...
Hey! Where does the little freak think he's going?
Jeffrey, was always wiping away his tears. Oh, his cruel and constant torment, so excluded from his peers. He sulked home in melancholy, his ears ringing with Hammerhead's voice. Sorry I'm different, he cried to the world. Do you think I had a choice? Then it hit him like a tidal wave. He saw no other way. Jeffrey the six-tentacled octopus planned to swim away.
Jeffrey! Jeffrey!
Yo, squid boy! Where you at?
It's no use anymore. We've been searching for hours and the lunar current's starting to pick up. Let's just go back to his sea cave to see if his mom knows anything new.
Do you think she made any kelp cookies recently?
Seriously?
Yo, no matter how upset I was, if I ran away and I knew there were fresh kelp cookies at home, let me quote my girl Nicki Minaj when I say starfish were meant to fly, you feel me?
Twinkle, twinkle, little star. Oh, I wonder what in this great blue ocean you possibly are. Hey, wait a minute. Look over there by the reef. Is that a tentacle hanging one out of one of those crevices?
Let's go, G.
Six is the loneliest number that there ever was. 8 would be ideal, but no. Neptune just decided to make me special.
I've never had a more special friend.
How'd you guys find me?
Yo, dog, you can't even play hide and seek with 6 tentacles. How could you want 2 more?
Shut up, Starfish Sammy. What she means is, who gives a barnacle what Hammerhead and his stupid tag-along oafs think? Let's face it, what you lack in tentacles is what he makes up for in obnoxious stupidity.
Never let the haters bring you down, G. You a true player. You an octopus, but with 6 tentacles? Oh! You so hardcore, I bet you $1,000,000 that you don't squirt ink. You squirt the sweat from 1980s death metal mosh pits.
I don't even know what that means.
What do you say we go back to your sea cave and watch Finding Human?
Well, that's not very hardcore.
Shut up, Starfish Sammy.
Hate is gonna hate.
Let's get out of here.
Just Hexapus? No longer. Jeffrey's 6 tentacles spread proud. And though he was excited for the film, something else rang much more loud. True friends stick by you, on dry land or swim. True friends are those who would never count your limbs. Some songs are universal, some are personal, and a very special few are both at the same time. I Know You By Heart is one of those magical songs, a valentine of love and loss. Here's Christy, Maddie, and Connor with I Know You By Heart.
So annoying.
One of the classic scripts of old-time radio is the famous Abbott and Costello routine, Who's On First? Anybody remember that one? You know, this is the skit where Lou Costello is considering becoming a ball player, and Bud Abbott wants to make sure he knows what he's getting into. I'll tell you what, let's have Justin and Ryan do a bit of it for you to refresh your memory.
Strange as it may seem, they give ball players nowadays very peculiar names.
Funny names?
Yeah, nicknames. Now, on the St. Louis team, we have Who's On First, What's On Second, I Don't Know Who's On Third.
That's what I want to find out. I want you to tell me the names of the fellows on the St. Louis team.
I'm telling you, Who's On First, What's On Second, I Don't Know Who's On Third.
You know, the fellows' names.
Yes.
Well then, who's playing first?
Yeah.
I mean, the fellow's name on first base.
Who?
The fellow playing first base.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who is on first?
Well, what are you asking me for?
I'm not asking you, I'm telling you. Who is on first?
I'm asking you, who's on first?
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Ugh. Well, all I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base?
No. What is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
No. Who's on first?
Okay. Now, when the guy at bat bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I want to throw the guy out at first base. So I pick up the ball and I throw it to who?
Now that's the first thing that you said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about!
Okay, now you have an idea of what that famous comedy routine of 1938 sounded like. We were wondering what that same scene would play like today. Once again, here is Justin and Ryan in How to Buy a Computer.
Super Duper Computer Store, can I help you?
Thanks, I'm setting up an office in my den and I'm thinking about buying a computer.
Mac?
No, the name's Lou.
Your computer?
I don't own a computer. I want to buy one.
Mac?
I told you, my name's Lou.
What about Windows?
Why? Will it get stuffy in here?
Do you want a computer with Windows?
I don't know. What will I see when I look at the windows?
Wallpaper.
Never mind the windows. I need a computer and software.
Software for Windows?
No, on the computer. I need something I can use to write proposals, track expenses, and run my business. What do you have?
Office.
Yeah, for my office. Can you recommend anything?
I just did.
You just did what?
Recommend something.
You recommended something?
Yes.
For my office.
Yes.
Okay, what did you recommend for my office?
Office.
Yes, for my office.
I recommend office with Windows.
I already have an office with Windows. Okay, let's just say I'm sitting at my computer and I want to type a proposal. What do I need?
Word.
What word?
Word in office.
The only word in office is office.
The word in office for Windows.
Which word in office for Windows?
The word you get when you click the blue W.
I'm gonna click your blue W if you don't start with some straight answers. What about financial bookkeeping? You have anything I can track my money with?
Money.
That's right. What do you have?
Money.
I need money to track my money?
It comes bundled with your computer.
What's bundled with my computer?
Money.
Money comes with my computer?
Yes, no extra charge.
I get a bundle of money with my computer. How much?
One copy.
Isn't it illegal to copy money?
Microsoft gave us a license to copy money.
They can give you a license to copy money?
Why not? They own it.
A few days later.
Super Duper Computer Store, can I help you?
How do I turn my computer off?
Click on Start.
The Land of a Thousand Dances is a song written and first recorded in 1962. The song's best known version was Wilson Pickett's 1966 recording on his album, which became his biggest ever pop hit. The na-na-na-na hook, as it's known, happened by accident when Frankie Cannibal Garcia, lead singer of Cannibal and the Headhunters, forgot the lyrics. The original recording mentions 16 dances. See if you can remember any of them. The pony, the chicken, the mashed potato, the alligator, the Watusi, the twist, the fly, the jerk, the tango. How do you even... The yo-yo, the sweet pea, the hand jive, the slop, the bop, the fish. Am I getting any of these right? Nope, I'm not. And finally, the Popeye. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, the land of 1,000 dances.
1, 2, 3!
For a few brief announcements, and then we'll be right back. You're listening to RHS Radio Theater on the air, coming to you live from the stage of the Performing Arts Center here at Rosemount High School, Rosemount, Minnesota.
RHS Radio Theater on the air is made possible through the support of the First State Bank of Rosemount, member FDIC, and by Mr. Mike's Mighty Mints, the candy mints guaranteed to take your breath away. Next up in the RHS Performing Arts Center is the premiere of Clean Shorts 2. The RHS Film Lot, in conjunction with the Digital Film Factory, will air 3 new short films on Saturday, February 16th at 7 p.m. On March 1st and 2nd at 7 p.m., the RHS dance show, titled Through Passion Comes Purpose, takes the stage here in the Performing Arts Center. RHS Radio Theater, on the air, is produced by the RHS Theater Arts Program. You can find us online at RHS Theater Arts and on Facebook at Rosemount High School Theater Arts.
Okay, folks, we're back live. Our next piece is a tribute, a dedication to a very special man. The book Tell My Sons by Rosemount resident Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weber is a book written by a man facing his final battle, a battle with stage 4 intestinal cancer. This book is a letter written to his three boys so that as they grew up without their dad, they would know what his life and death story had taught him. Over these past months, Lieutenant Colonel Weber has taken several opportunities to visit with the students and staff here at RHS to share that story, a story of empowerment, encouragement, and inspiration. Tonight, we say thank you to Lieutenant Colonel Weber for his courage and for sharing the lessons of his story with us. We all eventually reach the end of our march. For some of us, the route is long. For others, the path is short. But it's not the length of the journey that matters as much as the steps we take.
Tell my father that his son didn't run or surrender. I bore his name with pride as I tried to remember. You are judged by what you do while passing through. As I rest neath fields of green, let him lean on your shoulder. Tell him how I spent my youth so the truth could grow older. Tell my father when you can, I was a man.
In the following excerpt from the book, Lieutenant Colonel Weber addresses his three sons, Matthew, Joshua, and Noah. Strength, weakness, bravery, fear. I sometimes wonder if we think too seldom of what these words mean. We're taught early on in life that being afraid is something to be ashamed of. This is wrong-headed. Fear is healthy. Fear keeps us alive. Bravery, then, is not about avoiding fear or finding ways to ignore it. It's a reflection of what you intend to do with your fear. Strength is about getting something done, even when you have ironclad excuses or reasons for not doing it. Your mom has a hard time seeing how she exemplifies this, but she had shown it to us every day. And as sad and as upset as she is about what life has handed her, she never loses sight of what must be done to care for you, for her job, and for our home. What will you do when these moments arrive in your life?
The honor of your name. before the promise that we made so long ago.
For those of you here in the audience or listening online who might wish to read Lieutenant Colonel Weber's inspirational book, Tell My Sons, it can be purchased online at www.tellmysons.com. Our next act is brought to you by Mr. Mike's Mighty Prince, the Breathman's guaranteed to take your breath away. Be a prince. Don't make her wince. Use Mr. Mike's Mighty Mints.
Joanne had found a man who found her sweeter than the spring. But that breath of hers was the death of her aunt. He gave away the ring to someone fresher, someone better. And Joanne had lost her prince, 'cause that other girl was mighty fond of Mr. Mike's Mighty Mints. They're the cleanest and the meanest that your cash could ever buy. So don't be like Joanne and give those Mighty Mints a try.
There's a saying that only painters and lawyers can change white to black. And that life as a small-time lawyer is similar to life under the big top. You never know when you'll see a clown or a one-armed man, or discover that things are not always as they appear to be. See here in this skit titled, The Orange Menace.
Miss Landers? Miss Landers, I'm Stephen Goodwin. I spoke to you on the phone.
Yes, come in, Mr. Goodwin. Please, have a seat. Now, you mentioned on the phone, Mr. Goodwin, that you suffered an injury at a construction site.
Yes. I was on my way to work, and I was walking by the construction site where they're building that new supermarket.
The Super Saver Mart?
Yes, that's the one. I was walking by the construction site when I tripped over a piece of construction equipment and hit my head on the sidewalk.
The Band-Aid on your head?
Yes, I hit my head. Would you like to see my injury?
No, not right now. Now, you say you tripped over some construction equipment that was just lying there.
Yes.
On the sidewalk.
Yes.
Was there anything to mark this equipment?
To mark it?
Any signs to warn you of any danger?
No. No, there wasn't.
Mr. Goodwin, construction companies are required by law to visually mark off any areas of potential hazard. By not doing so, they hold themselves liable should anyone receive injury while in the area.
Like me? Like my head? Would you like to see my...
No, not just yet. Now, Mr. Goodwin, you said there was nothing to warn you that you were entering a hazardous area?
No.
Nothing to warn you of construction equipment lying around?
No.
Do you know what this equipment was, Mr. Goodwin?
I don't know what they're called.
Well, can you tell me what it looked like?
Yes. It was about 3 feet tall.
3 feet tall. Good. Go on.
Yes, it was 3 feet tall and cone-shaped.
Cone-shaped?
Cone-shaped, yes. And orange.
Orange? Mr. Goodwin, what you fell over is known as a pylon.
A pylon. Yes, that's what the officer told me.
Officer?
The police officer. He took the accident report at the scene.
Accident report?
Yes, I cut my head when I tripped over that orange menace.
Orange menace?
Would you like to see the injury? It took two stitches.
Mr. Goodwin, pylons are used at construction sites and other hazardous areas.
But I tripped.
You tripped over it because you weren't paying attention.
But shouldn't they be marked somehow?
Mr. Goodwin, pylons are markers. They're bright orange so people can see them. How else should they be marked? With orange flags?
Those didn't work.
Didn't work?
These pylons had some sort of orange flag sticking out of them.
Orange flags?
But I didn't see them until afterwards. They should have marked them somehow with the word danger or something. These flags were plain.
Mr. Goodwin, I don't feel that you have much of a case here. The construction site used bright orange pylons. and flags to warn the public of a dangerous condition.
Dangerous condition?
Yes, a dangerous condition, like a hole in the ground or some construction equipment lying
around.
Or
tape?
Tape?
Yes. These pylons had this plastic tape wrapped around them. That's what I caught my foot on.
Would you like to see
if my... If you ask me one more time, I will pull your stitches out, so help me God! Now, Mr. Goodwin, you do not have a case. The U.S. Department of Labor, OSHA, and several other government agencies dictate proper safety regulations at construction sites. From what you told me, all the safety regulations were adequately followed when you were injured. I'm sorry, but you have no case against the construction company.
Miss Landers, if the construction company follows the rules set by the state, and people still get hurt, then shouldn't the state be held responsible?
Well, I suppose the state would be held accountable if you... What? Mr. Goodwin, come in and have a seat, please.
So you think I have a case?
Oh, of course I do. Your injury was caused by the state's incompetence in creating proper safety guidelines.
And we're going to sue the state?
Oh, yes, we are.
Would you like to see my injury?
Oh, yes, definitely. Ooh, that is a nasty one.
Mood Indigo is a jazz composition and song with music by Duke Ellington and lyrics by Irving Berlin. The tune was originally composed for a radio broadcast in October 1930 and was originally titled Dreamy Blues. Renamed Mood Indigo, it became a jazz standard. Here are Maddie and Josh with their interpretation of Mood Indigo.
You
me. So it's 4 a.m. and here I am in the cold and damp,
just around the corner from headquarters. Apart from a slight buzzing in my ear, there's radio silence. Edging my head round the corner, I can just make out the Mont Gothic building that houses more secrets than a politician's bedroom. The call had come just 40 minutes ago. The head of Song Section, that's Special Operations Non-Governmental, is held hostage in his office. Serves him right for trying to impress by working long hours, if you ask me. Anyway, the problem now is how to get into the building without the terrorists seeing me. Aha! If I can just sneak across the road and round that truck, I'll be hidden from view long enough to get to the entrance of HQ. Here goes. And, I made it. Now to get past the security guard. Never trust anyone is my motto. Oh, good. It looks like he's off to do his rounds. He's clearly unaware of what's going on upstairs. Now, quickly with the lock. And in. Now to get upstairs. Uh-oh, here comes the guard. Into this closet.
Ah, bugger!
Okay, I don't think he noticed. I'll just keep the door open a little so I can see what he's up to. Oh, he's picked up the phone. Probably calling his girlfriend, if he even has one. He's not a particularly nice-looking fellow. Okay, I'm gonna ease out and slip around the corner to the stairs. I can't risk the elevator. It might be booby-trapped. And up we go. Now, which floor is Song? I think it was the 17th. Ninth. Only six more to go. No, that's wrong. Seven. No. Oh, who cares? A long way. Oh, God. Must give up smoking. Right. 16th floor, so better move quietly from now on. No signs of disturbance. All seems quiet. So there's the room. Head of Song. All inquiries to Sing Song. That'll be Senior Investigator Non-Governmental, Special Operations Non-Governmental. What a coincidental name. Okay. Ear to the door. All quiet inside. No lights on, and in we go. Drop to the ground and, hey, what the?
Surprise! Happy birthday!
What? Hold on just a second. I thought there's a hostage, right? There's a hostage. Oh, the whole department. I'll get you guys for this. I'm out of here.
Get Ready was a 1965 Curtis Mayfield composition, made famous by The Impressions. The song was included in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's 500 Songs That Shaped Rock and Roll, as well as having been chosen as one of the top 10 best songs of all time. Here are Peter, Alexa, Maddie, and the gang with People Get Ready.
Get ready, there's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord.
To open doors and bar them.
Gentlemen, you can call me Al.
3, 4.
A man walks down the street, says, why am I stopped in the middle now? Why am I stopped in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger, dogs in the moonlight. Far away, my willy door, Mr. Beer belly, get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find the stuff I'm using anymore. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your lost cat. I can be your belly, I'm ready when you're.
Man walks down the street, says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention. Whoa, my nights are so long. Where is my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone, gone? He ducks back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. Well, along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal. I can call you Betty, Betty, when you call me, you can call me Al, call me Al.
Take the hints. Use Mr. Mike's Mighty Mints. The
The show today was written and directed by Tom Hoffman, with music direction by Laura Sandow. Set design and lighting design by TJ Koziel. Sound design by Neil Wallace at Eventpro. And costume design by Mary Kay Showalter. Our internet streaming service by James Norris, in conjunction with Grand Stadium TV. Our musicians tonight, on the keyboard, Alex Pivoto and Christian Mandelson. On guitar, Josh Hugo and Connor Druitt. And on percussion, George Taylor. Our radio performing company, Dylan Giles. Justin Blackman. Peter Wallen. Ryan Taylor. Hannah Nelson.
You've been listening to KRHS Radio, Rosemount High School, Rosemount, Minnesota.